There are so many interesting women in Wisconsin history, yet most of us know little about them, unfortunately. Larry Mueller here. Our guest today, Genevieve McBride, is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and she's written a number of books about the women in Wisconsin history. And, you know, it's kind of a perfect time, I guess, to be talking about this. This is Wisconsin, or this is Women in History Month. So a perfect time to shed some light on those women who have made a huge difference over the years in our lives here in Wisconsin. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you have a woman that you'd like to talk about. Maybe you're wondering why we don't see women featured more prominently in our history books. Call in 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Genevieve McBride, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Hello again. You may not recall that we talked about 10 years ago.
It's been that. I know it's been a long time.
It was a wonderful experience.
I tell you, emails
where I told everybody what a terrific interviewer you are.
Well, I thank you so much. And I tell you, I was looking at your book, Women's Wisconsin, and I'm looking at the chapters and I'm looking at the names, and I'm feeling really bad, I guess, in a way, because I was not recognizing a lot of those women's names.
I know. I wouldn't have known them until I went looking for them. But, you know, I have to say, your question that you raised about why aren't they in the history books, I have to point out that they are. I can only write them. I can't make people read them, but maybe you can. The information I found, I got it out there hoping that more people would be as fascinated as I was by these stories.
There are some remarkable women that you write about.
Oh, yes.
Which women, let's talk about some that maybe stand out to you.
Oh, you know, that's like choosing my favorite child. It's just so hard. But one who was on the front of my very first book that I found so many decades ago now, Theodora Winton Yeomans, it remains just a fascinating person for me and fortunately now for many others.
Yeah.
The iconic photo of her on the front of the book now has become more widely used. You've seen it up there in Madison on a kiosk in front of the Historical Society, where she's wearing her suffrage regalia that she designed for women to wear as they marched through the streets of Wisconsin down to the Republican Convention in Chicago in 1915. And it was fun to read that she made the regalia available in Gimbel's for like $3.75. So, you know, all those details add up. How did this happen? How did they do this? Well, it took a lot of the politicking that we see today that women had to learn how to do.
You know, I want to go to Rob in Milwaukee. Had a question for you about women, Wisconsin women in science.
Not my strongest area. I've had to learn, though, because I actually teach it online, a course on women's history in the United States. And I get a lot of nursing students from our marvelous nursing school at my campus. And so I did go into looking for, to serve those students, women in medicine, and that's an interesting part of the story in the anthology, my second book. We've had some remarkable women in medicine. I'm branching out. I actually am looking for more women in science now, but we have had some, in other fields of science, we've had some stunning women physicians, and we know, of course, now that they are in huge numbers in the medical schools in recent decades. So I think we will continue to see women doing significant research in the health fields as well as others.
Talking today with Genevieve McBride, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who has written a number of books about women in history, and she's a marvelous book. Her latest is Dear Mrs. Griggs, Women Readers Pour Out Their Hearts in the Heartland. And I'm sure you mentioned Theodora Yalman's Ione Griggs has to also stand out in your mind.
Oh, well, Mrs. Griggs, the beloved Mrs. Griggs. I was born and raised here. I'm a lifelong Milwaukeean. And my parents both worked at the newspapers, the Journal and the Sentinel, when they were two. And so I got to grow up with Mrs. Griggs, not only reading her daily in the newspaper, as so many Midwesterners did, but I also got to meet her when I worked there in high school and college. So it was a wonderful experience to be able to go back and explore my past and the past of so many people and see what was her influence. I would point out I co-authored the book with my spouse, Dr. Stephen Byers, now retired from Marquette. He also worked with her there. We're both former newspaper people, and he actually was her boss at one point, if anybody could be in charge of Mrs.
Boss.
Griggs. She was a force to be reckoned with. She was there for more than half a century at the newspaper, and, you know, publishers came and went and all learned that Mrs. Griggs was somebody they had to listen to and not tell what to do.
No, I don't think anybody told her what to do. And she started out, she was in Chicago, wasn't she? She was writing about, she covered murderesses?
Murderesses, as she called them. Yes, that was a wonderful chapter. We'd heard inklings about that, those of us who knew her and followed her, but she didn't talk about it much. So that was great fun for me to go down and spend a lot of time in Chicago, get out of Wisconsin and look for her story there. And it was fascinating to find out that she was extremely well known. She wasn't Mrs. Griggs then. She was Ione Quimby, a native Chicago suburbanite. And she was extremely well known. She had one of the few bylines on the front page in Chicago in the 1920s when Chicago was at its height of notoriety for exactly the sorts of stories that she made her beat, a woman on the police beat, on the crime beat in Chicago in the 1920s when it was the murder capital of the world. It was just something to read. And she made a point of using her unusual gender in newspapering then, in major newspapers then, to interview the women who took out their boyfriends and husbands in rather astonishing numbers in that decade in the Windy City. And it was wonderful to read her advance when she then came up to Milwaukee in the 1930s, widowed, jobless, homeless, and was taken in by people at the Journal, and they decided to let her try an advice to the Lovelorn column. And she explained in her advance for the column that from her decade and more of talking to murderesses in Chicago, she hoped that she could act as a preventive in Milwaukee. And many men apparently survived in my fair city because Mrs. Griggs counseled the women that there were better ways to resolve their differences besides taking them out and putting them under.
Genevieve McBride, our guest today, who does a wonderful job of talking about her very strong interest in women in Wisconsin history. So fun to talk with her. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. You have a question about women in history here in Wisconsin. I hope you'll join us. And a few people have, but there's still a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Of course, you can always email us at talk@WPR.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And let's go to Art in Milwaukee. Art, thank you for calling. Hello.
Sure. Thanks for the show. I want to know if your guest has any information about two women in Wisconsin. One is Matilda Aneke, A-N-N-E-K-E, and the other is Mildred Fish Harnack.
Okay, Matilda Aneke And Mildred Fish?
Mildred Fish Harnack, absolutely.
Harnack.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Matilda Franziska Anneke, I like to pronounce it as we do here in my German city, is in my first book and in my second book. She was a fascinating person, a German immigrant from nobility who had suffered greatly under the laws there, which were much like our laws here, lost her children in custody laws then, as well as here for until quite recently, women couldn't have a say in their children. They belonged, just like the wives did, so did the children. They belonged to the husbands and fathers. And so in Germany, Anneke had started a newspaper and for women, and it was so well known that Susan B. Anthony was aware of it over here. When Anneke and her next husband were part of the German failed revolution in 1848, they then, like so many of the great people who came and made my city where what it is, they came here. She started her newspaper again in Milwaukee in the early 1850s, and actually I call her the mother of the labor movement in Milwaukee because she managed to get out all of six issues before the first union in this town and state was formed, a chapter of the International Typographers Union. Basically, the men organized to boycott putting out her paper anymore. So that was the end of that here. She then went to New Jersey for a while and was able to put out the paper with no problem there. Eventually came back here, started a girls' school that merged into what is University School of Milwaukee today through many mergers, but remained an extraordinary and significant voice in this country. Beautiful speeches that she gave, which are quoted in the first book on Wisconsin women, as well as in the second book, the anthology Women's Wisconsin. She is an extraordinary voice and a very moving story. We need to know more about her. The difficulty is, as I understand it, that much of her work is in High German of that mid-19th century era, which few people today are interested in translating, doing the immense amount of work it takes, believe me, I know, to go through hundreds or thousands of newspapers. So I hope we get to learn more about her. Mildred Fish Harnack also is in the second book, of course. We actually are all supposed to, by law of our legislature, teach about her in every school in Wisconsin on Mildred Fish Harnack Day. She was, again, also a Milwaukeean who then went up to school in Madison in the 1920s at the university, met her future husband there, a German student who was studying at Madison, married him, went over to Germany with him, and saw the onset of the Hitler regime and what it was doing to that country throughout the 30s. She and her husband were part of the German resistance. They eventually were captured, and her husband, they were held for some time. Her husband was killed. And then Mildred Fish Harnack was the only American whose death was ordered directly by Hitler. She was beheaded there for her work in attempting to save Jews and others who were so suffering under the Hitler regime.
Yeah. So there you have it, Art. Thank you so much for bringing those, for asking about those two women, because it's wonderful to hear again their stories, their brief stories. Genevieve McBride does such a wonderful job of talking about those two women and many, many more. And you have a chance to join in again at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There are many, many, many interesting women in Wisconsin history that, frankly, so many of us know so little about. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Genevieve McBride, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. She may know more about women and Wisconsin women in history than probably anybody else living. She has edited an anthology called Women's Wisconsin, From Native Matriarchies to the New Millennium. She wrote On Wisconsin Women, Working for the Rights from Settlement to Suffrage, and co-author of Dear Mrs. Griggs, Women Readers Pour Out Their Hearts in the Heartland. So it's wonderful to have her with us today. And we will turn to our phones again for a question from Bob in Richland Center. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I wonder if our guest has any information on Ida James.
Absolutely. Again, I've been getting the information out there for more than two decades. Ada and even more her mother, Laura, are significant in my first book, and again in the second book. I just knew when I heard the questioner was calling in from Richland Center what the question was going to be about. The James family is wonderful. We know that way back in Richland Center in the 1870s, Laura James founded one of the early suffrage organizations in our state, one of those groups that a wonderful historian named Karen Blair has called, you know, looking at women's clubs as an ideological cover for what women were really up to. They fooled the men for a while. She didn't have to fool her family, though. Her husband was a state legislator from Richland Center, and so he actually sponsored on the floor of our state legislature the first bill for a suffrage referendum in this state, which was held in Wisconsin in 1886. And it's very important, I think, for us to understand how Wisconsin shifted from then to ensuing decades. In 1886, the voters of Wisconsin, who were entirely men then, voted for woman suffrage. They approved the referendum. If Wisconsin had gone forward with the will of the voters, the men of Wisconsin, we would have been the first state to have woman suffrage in this country. We had a chance at being on the good side of history. However, the law was challenged. It went to our state Supreme Court, which was then under the leadership of a justice named Ryan, who was rather infamous for denouncing any women's rights as traitorous and treason, and women who wanted them were treason, traitors to their sex, he said. And so the court determined that something was wrong with a couple of words and some punctuation, and sent it back to the legislature and said, well, you've got to fix this wording, which was wording that the men in the legislature had changed on the floor. The bill was originally written by women suffragists, and it would have been fine. And our legislature, in all their wisdom, took 15 years to get around to it, and only because Theodora Winton Yeomans and the Club Women of Wisconsin finally kicked their rears into gear in the early 20th century, and even then, won back only partial suffrage, the way that suffrage was won across this country. Incrementalism is a topic in politics today as we look at candidate debates. And incremental wins is the way that many reform movements won. Men, by virtue of apparently their anatomies, were born with the right to vote in this country. Women were told that they had to prove their abilities because they lacked that portion of the anatomy. Apparently, men vote with what's between their legs instead of what's between their ears. I don't get it, but and men's rules. And so women were often finding themselves saying, give us a little bit of suffrage and we'll show you we can handle it. So that's what happened here. We had school suffrage from 1902 on, with separate ballots, often pink, to be put in separate ballot boxes, often pink. So cute. But so we didn't have woman suffrage after all, even though it was the will of the men of Wisconsin in 1886. Then that legislator's brother, David G. James, the father of Ada, daughter of Laura, he then sponsored the second bill for a suffrage referendum in this state, which was held in 1912. And how things had changed. By then, many states to the west of us had full suffrage for women, but not here east of the Mississippi. And in 1912, the men of Wisconsin voted against woman suffrage 2-1, turned it down. So it got to the end of the nationwide suffrage campaign, and even at the end, women still did not have suffrage in this state. As Theodore Yeomans, the last leader of the suffrage campaign here, wrote, what was required was for the federal government to take it out of the hands of the men of Wisconsin and impose it upon them with a constitutional amendment.
Ah, very interesting. Bob, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Larry?
Yes.
I have one other quick comment. We had a very strong women's club in our city back in the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot to do with the building of our auditorium, our civic auditorium. And they had a separate room, I guess, that they really kept in their name for almost 100 years.
Absolutely, in memory of Laura G. James and her daughter Ada. And I believe that in Madison, Ada James' name is still on a women's support center on campus.
Yep.
As we remember her contributions, the second generation of her family to fight so strongly for suffrage. She was something else. She was the one who actually recruited Theodora Yeomans, who was sympathetic to suffrage, but had not been an activist for it. A well-known, extremely widely known journalist in Wisconsin, Theodora Yeomans. And in the 1911-1912 referendum campaign for the bill sponsored by Ada's father from Richland Center, the legislator then, Ada James recruited Theodora Winton Yeomans into becoming an activist for the campaign, and it's because of her then that Theodora Yeomans rescued the movement that had been moribund for decades under a marvelous woman named Olympia Brown, but she was feeling so defeatist then about this state. They really hadn't tried anything since the 1880s referendum, and Ada James then, who was partially deaf, so she really wasn't the person to be out in public for the campaign. She recruited Yeomans and supported Yeomans until World War One, which tore apart the suffrage movement in this state, much as it tore apart my city and much of this state, with so many people with ties to Germany and so.
Yeah.
Ada James went on to found a separate organization, the National Woman's Party branch, in this state. And while Yeomans continued on as the leader of the major state suffrage organization. But they came together in the end, and there was David G. James again, retired from the legislature by then, back in Madison for a meeting of the Grand Old Army of the Republic, the Civil War veterans of the Union side. And when Congress finally, and it was very close vote, passed the suffrage bill written by Susan B. Anthony back in the 1870s and sent it out to the states for ratification as a constitutional amendment. James and Yeomans settled their differences and got together again for the greater good and submitted the ratification bill to the legislature of Wisconsin. Once again, as so often in our history, our legislature had not concluded its work on time and was still in session in June of 1919, along with two other states still in session then. And so that actually meant that our legislature had the chance to make history, and it finally did on the good side, even though on the same day that legislature refused to approve suffrage at the state level in Wisconsin, the politicians in the legislature, all men then, decided to ratify the 19th Amendment, the first ratification of the 19th Amendment in the country. And it was fascinating to go back into the newspapers again and find out why the heck these guys acted so schizoid. You won't approve it in this state, but you're all for it in the country. What? And it turns out the politicians had a feeling that it was coming at them like a train. And they could not get out of the way. And so just in case the constitutional amendment went through and they would have to deal with women voters, they wanted to look good and say, well, I voted for the ratification, and hope that women would forget that on the same day they wouldn't allow it in this country. But it was another year and a half then until the last state needed ratified, Tennessee, by one vote, by one young man, newbie in his legislature, who switched his vote at the last moment because he got up that morning and found a note from his mother who said, "Sonny boy, do the right thing." And so he voted for woman suffrage. For that, he was run out of politics and never held office again in the state of Tennessee. But thank heavens for a
boy. He listened to his mother.
Yes, listen to your mothers is the watchword here.
Oh, Bob, thanks again. Dot in Manitowoc has something for us. Dot, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have three ladies in mind. One is Mary Knoll, the artist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You have her in the book, I would assume.
She is mentioned in there, yes.
Yes, and Georgia O'Keeffe, of course.
Yes.
And one that is with us right now is Ruth DeYoung Kohler. I hope you keep her in mind.
They are all in the second book because none of them were involved in the suffrage campaign. Mm-hmm. The first book concludes with that and 1921, actually, another significant action. So you're talking about more recent women. Yes, Mary Knoll. I have, of course, been to her famous home here in a suburb of my city, where her artworks were amazing. Georgia O'Keeffe, of course, also a wonderful, famous artist from Sun Prairie. She's mentioned, but my interest is more in many famous women started here and got the heck out of the state to get anything done, as she did. So I look more at the women who came here and stayed here. Mm-hmm. To change Wisconsin. Georgia O'Keeffe, of course, went off to the desert and gave us extraordinary artworks. I have a favorite of my own of hers. And Ruth DeYoung Kohler, of course, is significant. She is one of those women who did stay here and was so important in helping to preserve our history and her service on the board of the State Historical Society. I also, decades later, served on that board of curators and got an appreciation for what she and so many other women had done throughout the years to save some of the documents that made it possible for me to write the histories. And by the way, I have a particular fondness for Manitowoc because my son-in-law is from there.
Yeah. Oh, excellent.
So a few years ago, I had the very Wisconsin experience of going up there for a bridal shower that the women of Manitowoc held for my daughter. Her mother-in-law is a docent at your marvelous historical museum. And so I had the fun of sitting there at the bridal shower, looking out in the beautiful wall of windows at the submarine. How many people get to have a bridal shower next to a submarine?
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dot, for calling. And let's give Tim and Waukesha a chance. Tim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. How are you? I'm glad I held on. You know, I think years ago, I could be mistaken, but I believe I had Genevieve McBride as a journalism teacher at UWW. Is that possible?
Oh, my gosh. Are you from my very first classes that I got to teach at the college level? Hello there.
And I remember we toured the Journal, and you pointed out Mrs. Griggs. She was sitting there with her hat at that old typewriter.
Oh, my goodness. She was still there. Yes, I was. I lived in Waukesha for many years, as you do, and got to discover its wonderful history back to when it was Prairie Village. And that's when I was director of public relations at Carroll College, and then also was teaching my first journalism courses at UW-Waukesha, and you were there. My gosh, it's good to hear from one of my former students.
We're repeating ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, Theodore Yeomans, as you probably know or haven't said yet, was part of the founding family of the Waukesha Freeman.
Absolutely, and I've got to tell you stories that I love. I know that because before I was PR director at Carroll College, I was the assistant news editor of the Waukesha Freeman, and so I was fast and worked for the Yeomans family. Wonderful, Bud Yeomans, Juanita, wonderful people. And so when I was later on looking for a research topic, because I was doing my commuting up to Madison to do my doctoral work there, and I thought, well, now I had always been fascinated by this woman. My mother was very active in politics and had raised me with stories of this fascinating woman, Theodore Yeomans, and then I had certainly learned more about her at the Freeman. So I decided to look into it. So I got in touch with the Yeomans family genealogist, Mim Welford, who I just saw recently again. She's so dear. And I knew I'd started by calling Bud, my old boss, and he said, you've got to talk to Mim. She's our genealogist. So I called Mim and I said, can you tell me something about Theodore Yeomans? And she is such a classy lady. And Mim said, well, she said, I cannot say everything that we know, Genevieve. She said, Theodore Winton Yeomans married into the family, obviously. She married another Henry Yeomans, an ancestor who was the publisher and editor of the Freeman in the late 19th century. She had been a reporter on his staff, a very early woman reporter, and then married the boss. And famously, as I found looking at the old Freemans, Henry Yeomans always weighed in once a week. It was a weekly paper then, on page 4 with all his opinions. He was one of the leading spokesmen for the progressive movement in Wisconsin. But 2 pages before that, on page 2, was Theodora's page, his wife's page, where she railed against page 4, since the progressive men were not very progressive about women. So I said, you know, good Lord, what was it like in that family where Theodore and Henry, every week, the city of Waukesha could see them fighting it out right in the pages of the paper? And she said, well, Genevieve, I have to tell you, she said, Uncle Henry had to make a lot of his own dinners. I loved that.
Oh, man.
So it must have been the most fun you could have for a few pennies in Waukesha to pick up that paper every week and see the battle raging between page 2 and page 4.
Oh, man, I guess so.
Well, so I had 2 people that I admire. The one is very current. That's Diane Hendricks from Beloit, who owns ABC Supply and is a super, super, very conservative businesswoman who I think is going to do a lot of things for the state in the future. Mm-hmm. But my aunt, my great aunt, grew up in Milwaukee. She went to grade school and high school with Golda Meir. And I think she worked at the library with Golda Meir, if Golda Meir worked at the library. What I want to know, even though she left the state, is if you could tell us if you know anything about her in her formative years that made her become the woman she was when she immigrated to Israel.
Absolutely. And I'm sitting here at home just a block from the library on my campus that is named for her, the Golda Meir Library, our most famous alum of UW-Milwaukee, although as I point out to students, she never graduated. Mm-hmm. I want to give them some hope if they also decide to go off in interesting individual routes, and that's because we didn't offer a major in how to be a prime minister of Israel at the time. She was Goldie Mabovich to us. Goldie Mabovich, whose family came over from Russia, from the persecution of the pogroms. They came over here, I think, in 1908. We have her whole story up on our campus website, our library website. It's wonderful. And She grew up on Walnut Street in Milwaukee, which was then the Jewish ghetto in every way of that word. And then she came to the predecessor of my institution before we were the University of Milwaukee, of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We were the Milwaukee State Teachers College. So she came to the local school to study to be a teacher. She got very involved, though, at that time in our campus in Zionist activities. And that's the direction she went with. Again, this story is all in the second book, the anthology. And so Goldie Mabovich ended up leaving school, leaving the city, and eventually leaving the country in 1920, I think just as we won suffrage here. She went over to then Palestine to help build the kibbutz movement, and of course was active in that for decades. She came back to this city in the 1960s, and actually my mother, as I mentioned, was a journalist here after she'd been very active in politics, and my mother had gotten to interview many extraordinary people. But she always said her absolute favorite day on the job for the Milwaukee Sentinel was the day that she went around Milwaukee with Golda Meir.
Wow.
And we have this wonderful picture of 4th Street School, which then was renamed for her, the Golda Meir Grade School in Milwaukee Public Schools. And there's Goldie Mabovich Meir sitting in this little elementary school desk where she used to sit there. And she, much of what I talk about her from my mother's coverage of her that day, she interviewed her and listened to her reminisce. And Golda Meir remembered coming over from Russia to then encounter discrimination here again at her school every day in German Milwaukee. They started the day by singing not our national anthem, but Deutschland über alles. And she had neighbors who spit on the Jews. And the like, but she also recalled, she said, here was where she first experienced freedom, and she, being a wonderful person that she was, had very fond memories of Milwaukee. They're all in my mother's coverage, and much of it is mentioned in the book, and of course, throughout all my books, as a historian, the footnotes tell you how to go back to the originals and find even more, which you can do online these days with so many newspapers. And it was just an extraordinary story. Very soon after her visit to Milwaukee, then she went back to Israel and was elected Prime Minister of Israel, which is when so many more Americans got to know about her. But back here in Milwaukee, there still would be. There's a wonderful book called Golda about her early years here, which also was a terrific resource for me, that talked about this little girl named Goldie Mabovich and how Milwaukee was formative for her before she went off to lead another country.
Genevieve, it is a great pleasure to have a chance to visit with you again. You know, it was 10 years ago. We should be doing this much more frequently.
Every March? Do we get any of the other 11 months?
We can give you some of the other 11 months too, because there's lots of interest and there's lots of callers. We're online to visit with you, and I.
Oh, please let me come back. I'd love to talk about it anytime. Let me give you some other dates that always are meaningful to me. June 10th is when we ratified the 19th Amendment, the first state in the country to do so. And, of course, August 26th is Women's Equality Day nationwide, and we always celebrate it here in Wisconsin, too. That is when the 19th Amendment became law. And everybody, look forward to August 26th, 2020. We're coming up on it. That will be the 100th anniversary of the amendment, the part of our Constitution written by a woman, Susan B. Anthony.
There we go. Well, we'll keep those dates in mind, and you keep them in mind too, Genevieve, and thank you again so much. I really appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mueller. It's been delightful to talk to you and your listeners again.
Genevieve McBride, professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. and author of some great books. She wrote On Wisconsin Women, Working for Their Rights from Settlement to Suffrage. Dear Mrs. Griggs, her latest, Women Readers Pour Out Their Hearts in the Heartland. And you know what? I bet our next guest probably remembers Mrs. Griggs, or at least remembers reading reading her, because she worked probably side by side with her. Jackie Michard has a new book out. It is a spellbinder for sure. It's called 2FYC. We'll talk with her next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.